Welcome to Darren Creating Refuge, episode 4. And in this episode, I would like to address the importance of movement, also referred to as exercise, and how it's really helped me in terms of grounding in times of trauma. In particular, I am an avid cyclist. For the majority of my life, I've been cycling. I started cycling when I was about 8 years old, I believe. And I learned without training wheels. I learned by riding on the back seat of my friend's Screamer, which is a bike that made this screaming sound. And we would go around and around in circles in the basketball court at Buena Vista Park, which is now Little John Park in Alameda, California. Right across the street where I grew up. And my first bike was a Huffy with mag wheels. And I rode that until the sixth grade. I had a growth spurt and I wound up getting an Easy Street by Shogun at the local Alameda bike shop called Joe's. I believe it was on Encinel Avenue. There is now a new Joe's that opened up, and I believe the owner of that store is the son of the original Joe's bicycle shop in Alameda. So where I grew up in Alameda, there's a long cycling history. There's a lot of pro riders who ride in Alameda out to the San Leandro Marina, which I do a lot. It's one of my favorite rides. I love riding out to the beach. I love being by water when riding my bike to decompress. And it helps me get in touch with nature. And I see cycling as a form of meditation, a form of movement meditation. Cycling helps me process my thoughts. It helps me let off steam in terms of anger. But one thing that I have found as a learning process in cycling is that I used to be kind of a no pain, no gain cyclist. And how I really paid the price in that process was I wasn't feeding myself while I was riding. So I would go on these tremendously long rides, sometimes up to 8 hours or more without food. And then I would come home and be really irritated and irritable. I started developing really bad cramps in my calves as well as a result of not fueling on my ride. So not drinking water or not eating granola bars or anything. And that could have really been detrimental to my health. I could have died. I could have had a pulmonary embolism. And I was having a lot of faint spells when I got back into cycling. So part of my journey through living through trauma was I had a period of intense self-hate for a number of years, about 20 years. And this started in the academic complex where I was overextending myself to help others, particularly in social justice arenas, and then just go home and drink or go home and smoke cigarettes or go home and smoke marijuana or what have you. The story is pretty familiar to those of us who overextend. So the process of self-medication. So I was in that loop for around 20 years, and as a result, I gained a lot of weight. At my heaviest, I was 300 pounds. By the time I was 38 years old, I developed prostate disease from sitting too much. So another thing that I found in this journey through and recovery through self-hate was I was watching so much TV, and a lot of reality TV started filling up the television, and you know what a non-productive way to live by just consuming a lot of reality television and laughing at the plight of others, even though it's manufactured, especially while one is drunk or high or what have you. And so this led to a very unhealthy lifestyle. And when I returned to California after graduate school and earning my doctorate, I took up cycling. So I started cycling to San Francisco State by taking my bike on the BART, which is Bay Area Rapid Transit, which is the train system out here, or by taking the ferry and getting on the train in San Francisco, and racking up around 20 plus miles a day. Within 6 months, I lost around 80 pounds. That's when I decided to leave academia for good and just pursue bicycling as my career. And that journey, many thought was insane or crazy, but if I stayed in academia, I would probably be dead by now, because I wasn't happy. It just wasn't for me, even though I'm a pretty well-versed academic. I could write like nobody's business and whatnot. It was just being in that system was just very oppressive. And I just felt that a lot of people were vicariously living through me by wanting me to carry on their legacies and whatnot. So cycling as a form of meditation, of movement to process thought, rather than just, say, staying indoors. And for many years, I just stayed indoors and I would have to fight to go outside. So I recall hot summers, I would just stay in every day. And this was for a period of 15, 20 years when I was academic. I would really not want to leave in the summer. And it was kind of like a vampire-like lifestyle. It didn't help that a lot of my friends at the time were in self-hate, self-destructive modes as well, and just preferred to stay indoors rather than go out in the evening or what have you. So this kind of like hater lifestyle, if you will. So it was very self-loathing, very haterisms, what have you, a lot of name calling, humiliation, and I don't associate with those people anymore. So this is also a lesson in terms of boundaries. So can one make movement or exercise like a bubble, if you will, to protect oneself? There's a lot of lingo that's going on out there about ableism. It's another ism, just like anything else. Yes, it exists. I am in alignment with disability justice. I have been for many years. But sometimes I think this ableism tag that gets thrown around is very limiting. If one cannot do one form of exercise, there's other forms of exercise. So in terms of movement, Tai Chi, yoga, etc., there's been a lot of ableist language thrown around at that. But it's very limiting because I have seen people with disabilities. I've seen people with cerebral a palsy actually doing movement exercise or disability friendly yoga. So don't let these terms become a straitjacket. It's just like any other movement. Sometimes they can be stifling and very polemic, and that's not really a healthy way to be in terms of recovering from trauma. Black and white thinking, borderline personality disorder, all the stuff that we're familiar with. Part of the process of healing from that is noticing that there's areas of gray. So not everything has to be black or white. So with movement, there's also another thing that I enjoy is walking. So I enjoy walking in the parks. I live about a mile away from a creek here in Oakland called Salsal Creek. And once you enter that creek area, it's just like you're not in the city and you're surrounded more by the sounds of nature. And during that time, reflecting on the cycles of life and death. So now it's spring. There's a lot of things blooming. We've had things blooming for a while now since our spring came a little early in terms of temperature. We've had a lot of rains too that inspired that. And so connecting with nature while walking. I believe in terms of my process, if I stayed indoors, I would probably be down at square one in terms of my recovery. I've made a radical transformation in terms of my weight. I have, for the last 2 years, regained a weight span of, say, 165 to 190. In terms of how it fluctuates, and this is a great improvement over living between 260 and 300 pounds for a number of years that influenced a lot of my diseases that I had at the time. So taking fascination and curiosity within one's body, watching it morph through body shaping, and just the importance of getting outside. Once you're outside, I feel, in my case, that a lot of the chatter in the head goes away. That doesn't mean that I am not irritated or negative when I'm outside, but it's a lot less of a rut than if I'm indoors. So cycling, walking, for a moment when I was working as a camp counselor up in Napa, California, about a year ago, I also took up jogging. So there was some moderate sized hills that I would jog up and down before the shift began, which was like over a 12-hour shift of work. And that was really refreshing. I haven't really taken that up in terms of the city. However, I do like going to playgrounds and use the exercise equipment if available. So if there's a jungle gym, hanging upside down, doing pull-ups, etc. It's really something in terms of how one's environment can really influence one's reaction. So as a cyclist, many people may be familiar that we're kind of a second-class citizen on the street. Cars don't like us. Pedestrians don't like us either. And it seems like most of our cities and metropolises are becoming more and more filled with these robot-like people who are in a hurry, who don't obey the traffic signs or signals. So, that can be a pressure valve for a lot of cyclists, and I find myself yelling a lot when I'm riding. To kind of cope with this anger, one thing that I've been doing since I'm seeing and witnessing rapid change in Oakland, California. So housing, there's a crisis here in the Bay Area, and there's a lot of luxury apartments going up in my ancestral neighborhood of Chinatown in Oakland. So I sing songs. So if there's a song that gets stuck in your head and you're cycling or walking, just start singing, humming. And so I've been singing, of all songs, that Dirty Dancing song, Hungry Eyes, when I'm riding my bike. I've been singing Def Leppard's Photograph. I make up my own song sometimes about the changes that I'm witnessing. And I never swear, but people find it funny when they see a cyclist singing his head off or her head off. But, you know, I just feel like that's an old part of the Bay Area that's rapidly and curiously disappearing. So I'm claiming my space, if you will, when I'm on my bike. Another thing that's helpful is while riding or exercising, maybe just if you are startled by the environment sounds like cars and whatnot, wearing headphones, but not full blast, because you do want to hear, like, say, a big rig truck or whatever coming by you. But for myself, I have taken a back seat in terms of wearing headphones when I ride, because there's been some near accidents with me being broadsided almost. But that has also happened without me having such a device. In addition, there is another thing that's been sold. There's this little speaker box I had called a Boombotics. It's like a Bluetooth speaker, and you could attach this to handlebars, or you can attach it to a part of your bag or a belt loop, and it could be a little speaker for your music, and you could sing along with that as well. If you're walking, if you're jogging, or if you're on a bike, or just relaxing on a park bench, and then everyone can hear your music. So those are some methods that I've been using to ground myself, to quiet my mind. It's not 100% bulletproof. There are moments of anger on the road, especially when I'm almost hit. But in general, I find that getting outdoors every day if I can and moving for at least an hour, just as the doctors say, makes a lot of difference. And disconnecting from, say, the television or video games or what other electronic gizmos you may find yourself immersed in, I find that being plugged in sometimes just leads to another level of anxiety. So undoing oneself from the electronic leash of text messaging, updates on Facebook, which I have now been, it's been deactivated for over a year, going on 2 years now. And now that there's this big old crisis about Facebook and Cambridge Analytics and political persuasion and whatnot, I'm glad I got rid of my Facebook. It's ate up a lot of time. Some people see it as a tool to aid the voices of those who have disabilities, and I agree with that. I was a large proponent of that. However, there's other things besides Facebook. One can use other forms of social media if the political actions of Facebook rubs you the wrong way. So with that, I am going to end this episode of Darren Creating Refuge, episode 4, exercise and movement. So if there's anything you could take away from this, get outside and move in any way that you can. And even if you're breathing, that is considered movement. So this is Darren tuning out. I hope you all enjoyed tuning in, and I'll post episode 5 soon.